You are listening to the Passion City Church DC podcast. To learn more about Passion City Church, including our gathering times in Atlanta and Washington, D.C., visit us online at PassionCityChurch.com. Today's talk comes from Pastor Ben Stewart.
Well, every relationship we enter into has an impact on our personal lives. Every single one. Now, obviously, some more than others, like your parents are going to have more of an influence on you than like your mailman, unless he's just like a really dynamic mailman. But every relationship has some kind of impact on our lives. You may have some professors or teachers you've basically forgotten, but you've had others that their perspective, worldview has shaped yours. You're never the same after having interacted with them. So all different relationships touch us with different levels of impact. But for each one of us, there's a handful of relationships that when we enter into them, they leave no area of our life unchanged. And for Donna and I, where we stand in life, we get to meet with a lot of people entering into two kind of critical relationships in life. We talk to a lot of people that are entering into marriage, and we talk to a lot of people who are entering into parenthood, having a child. And those relationships, spouse and child, are some of those relationships that when you enter into those, no area of your life remains untouched. And my guess is most of us in here know that. That's kind of self-evident. You're like, well, of course, I know that. It would be weird if you had a friend get married and you were to see them later and say, hey man, how's it being married? And they go, you know what? It hasn't changed my life at all. Like really, nothing's changed. You wouldn't celebrate that. You would say like, do y'all need counseling? Like what's wrong? What happened? Like you go, no, you just knit your life together with that person. That deep intimate union has implications for how you spend money, where you live, what you do with your time, where you are on Friday night. It has implications for every part of your life. And same with being a parent. If someone had a kid and you said, what's it like being a parent? They're like, you know what? It has changed nothing about my life. I spend my money the same. I do all my stuff the same. You'd go, I don't think it's supposed to be like that. I think becoming a parent should have a profound impact on how you make choices, how you perceive of yourself when you look in a mirror and how you navigate this world. That relationship should change everything. And let me tell you something. It is never more true than in a relationship with God. If you tell humanity, yeah, I have a relationship with God. Yeah, I know God. That should change every part of your life. It'd be weird to say, you know what? I have an intimate connection with the maker of the stars. But you know what? It really has no bearing on the way I make choices. Career? Actually, I don't even think about it most of the day. That's a crazy collection of sentences. I know the one who kickstarted history and will end it. I know the one who made Mars and everything between us and there. And yet that has no bearing on how I see myself or navigate the world he created. That's a crazy thing to say. And that's James' point through most of his book. If you have an intimate connection with God, this changes everything. It changes the way you talk to people made in his image completely. Changes the way you treat people, no matter what socioeconomic background they're from. Changes the way you spend money. Changes the way you spend time. And then today he's going to say, and it should radically impact the way you make plans. The way you make decisions in life should be shaped by this most fundamental of all relationships. It should change how you plan. Now, what's interesting about James is he's going to say that, but he's not going to say it gently like a counselor. This should have implications on your planning. He's going to say it more like a drill instructor. That's why he started with, come now. It's kind of like saying, hey, come on now, you who say. And then he's going to talk to a group of people, and commentators, you know, say, hey, he's probably talking to business people, right? That he's talking about people who travel to trade and make money. So he's talking to business people. But then he's also probably talking to believers because this whole letter is written to people who believe in Jesus. So he's probably talking to believing business people, and that's true. And yet he kind of generalizes the language to discuss anybody who makes plans. And basically anybody who says these five things. Today or tomorrow we will go, they plan to travel, into such a town, they plan to arrive. Spend a year there, they plan to spend a certain amount of time. Trade, they plan to do something. And make a profit, they plan for their activity to have a certain result. So if you've ever said, I plan to go someplace, arrive there, do a thing, and have a result, James is talking to you. And not only is he talking to you, James has a problem with you. Do you notice at the end he'll call you arrogant? So if you've ever said anything like, I'm going to go to DC and get an internship, that's arrogant. I'm going to go home tonight and have dinner. How dare you? I'm going to show up to work tomorrow. Evil! James has an issue with you talking that way. Now, why does he have that? Does James have a problem with you making plans? No, he does not. In verse 15, it's okay to make plans. Does he have a problem with people making a profit? No, this isn't about business. Jesus will tell us to make a profit with our gifts and talents. We should have a good return for what we do. And so it's not about that. What James is getting onto is our words. He says, those of you who say that, instead you should say, if the Lord wills, we'll do this and that. Which is honestly why I used to hate this passage. Because I just thought it was the Bible being super nitpicky. Like, oh, I'm sorry. Okay, so now every time I talk, I have to say, if the Lord wills, I'll come by for dinner. If the Lord wills, I'll drive home tonight. If the Lord wills, I'll go to bed. I'm like, come on, man. And I just thought he was nitpicking semantics. But now I realize that's not his issue. His issue isn't words. His issue is worldview. His issue is perspective. What he's challenging in us is presumption. That you're going to go out and make plans and you're missing some key data before you make decisions as you walk on God's earth. And what's fascinating about that is, if you notice who he's talking to, he doesn't say, come now you who say, today or tomorrow, I will sit on my couch and eat chips and drool and stare at the ceiling. He's not talking about people who don't do anything. He's talking about people who plan to move, people who want to get stuff done. He's talking to people that are like, I'm getting up tomorrow. I'm going to this city. I'm going to make some moves. I'm going to get some money. I'm going to climb the ladder. I'm going to be a success. He's talking to go-getters. He's talking to Washington, D.C. people. Those of you who want to mix it up, make moves, get stuff done, you be careful before you hit go that you don't start going to work without the right worldview. That you don't start making plans when your perspective is off. Because if you do, he's going to call that arrogant. He says, you're making your plans and you're missing some key information before you do it. And James is going to challenge you in two areas, how you see yourself and how you see God. And you need a right understanding of yourself and you need a right understanding of God if you're going to walk the right way through the earth that God made. You see it? So first, he's going to address the way you think about yourself. And so I love the way he does it. That whole first section is just the subject. If you read it, he says, come now, you who say, today or tomorrow we'll go into such and such a town, spend a year there, trade, and make a profit, yet you do not know what tomorrow will bring. What is your life? What's funny is that's all one sentence in the original. And the simple sentence is, what is your life? All that stuff beforehand is the subject. Come on now, you who say, today or tomorrow I'll travel and arrive at a place, spend a year there, trade and profit, and yet you don't know what tomorrow will bring. What is your life? And so all that is people beforehand, people who are going to talk a bunch, but are missing some key data. Namely, two pieces of key data about themselves and two about God. The first one is he says, you don't know what tomorrow will bring. He says, you're making all these plans like you assume you're going to get to do something tomorrow. And that's presumption. Because here's the thing, you have limited visibility. You don't know what tomorrow will bring. And the Bible warns about that all through the wisdom literature. It's interesting. Proverbs 27 says, don't boast about tomorrow, for you do not know what a day will bring forth. To assume you're going to get what you want tomorrow, it calls arrogance or boasting. You don't know that. And so, yeah, you're like, well, of course, technically, I'm not a prophet. I don't know the future. But the Bible wants you to take that in really deeply. Don't assume tomorrow will roll on like every other day. You have to acknowledge your own limitations. I don't know that. I have a limited visibility. I don't know if tomorrow I'll meet the one or tomorrow I'll get hit by a bus. I don't know that. And I really don't have control over that. And that limited visibility should give us humility. I don't get to control everything that happens. Somebody else does. It's interesting. I read a book years ago called The Survivors Club. And it was talking about this lady, Ellen. She was heading to her brand new knitting group. Very exciting. So she was heading to her knitting group. She got all her knitting materials, and she was coming up. She's running late to her knitting meeting, and so as she was on her way up there, she tripped and fell on her way towards the door. Very embarrassing. Landed on top of all her knitting stuff right when they opened the door to welcome her, and she's just yard sale on their front steps. And so she kind of has to collect herself as she gets all her gear. I'm so sorry. Walks in the room, sets her stuff down, sits down, and everyone's just staring at her with their mouths open. Real awkward way to enter a group. We won't do that to your community group. She's wondering, like, what are these people's deal? And then she looks and notices that her knitting needle, not sewing needle, knitting needle, had pierced her breastplate and was resting in her left ventricle of her heart. Change of plan. We're not knitting tonight. We're going to call the ambulance. They get her to the hospital. They run a bunch of tests, x-rays. Yep, that is a needle. Yes, it's in your heart. And so they begin to work on that. They remove that needle, get it out. You survive the experience. Then she gets a call a little bit later and says, hey, here's crazy. We were looking at your x-rays and whatnot. And while we were looking at that huge needle sticking out of your chest, we noticed an enlarged lymph node. Telltale sign of breast cancer. And so she was able to get on it early, get chemotherapy, change a plan for the next several months of her life as she went through chemo. But she survived cancer. A cancer she wouldn't have even known about if she hadn't got a needle through her chest. So the needle that almost killed her actually ended up saving her life. None of that was what she planned to do on that Wednesday, right? She thought she was knitting. No, you're going to risk your life to save your life. You don't control things. You have no idea tomorrow what's going to happen to you. And it's important to understand that. I don't control it. I have limited visibility, and that should bring some humility. I'm not going to presume I get what I want tomorrow. I don't know. I had a friend who was a pastor in Houston that he was going downtown into Houston to a meeting, which he never does. If you live on the outskirts of Houston, you don't want to go down in there. It takes forever. It's a huge city. But he had to go downtown for a meeting, got down there, was in a meeting. The meeting ended early, and he realized, I'm downtown. I'm never downtown. But MD Anderson's down here. I know somebody who's in the hospital there. I'm just going to go visit him. So he went and did this visit to see a friend. And while he was there, the doctor noticed, hey, man, you don't look so good. He's like, actually, I've not been feeling too good. And the doctor was like, hey, what are your symptoms? Let me take a look at you. Hey, come here for a second. And the doctor put him on a treadmill. And while he's on the treadmill, the doctor was like, all right, stop. Don't do anything. Come with me. My buddy went to pick up his stuff, and he said, no, don't carry anything. And he grabbed him by the hand and began to walk him out, put him in a car, ran him next door, rushed him to surgery. He said, do you know what was happening to you during that stress test? You failed badly. He said, your heart was trying to have a heart attack. And I don't remember the official name of the, what do you call it? Artery, but I know colloquially they call it the widowmaker. They said, your artery was 90% clogged. Your heart was trying to have a heart attack. And they call it the widowmaker because you don't see it coming, but you die right away. He said, you would have died today. And my buddy realized, oh, I thought I was going to a meeting. By chance, I decided to go visit a friend. And in doing that, now I get to see my kids tonight. But that wasn't a guarantee. Today, I was almost gone. And he had to realize at the end of that, you know what? I don't know what's happening. We're not in near as much control of this life as we say we are. That I have limited visibility of what's coming. And that should bring some humility to me. And not just humility. This is interesting. That was just the minor point. His main point is, what is your life? He's like, you don't know what's coming tomorrow. And what is your life anyway? He says, you are a mist that appears for a little time and then goes. It's the same word for smoke. He says, you're like smoke in front of the sun. It just passes by for a second. You're like a little mist in front of one of these pictures. It's gone. You're like a spritzer in a bathroom. That was you. You're just not here very long. You are a vapor. What's he saying about that? There's not an enduring substance to you. We go into each day like I get another day and I get another day and I get another day. You're just not here very long. And so we can get an arrogance about, well, I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that. What are you going to do? What are you going to accomplish? You're not going to be around that long. I remember for me learning this in elementary school. I don't even know why they had us read this. They had us read a poem from the 1800s by Shelley called Ozymandias. And it's about a guy. He said, I met a traveler from an antique land who said, two vast and trunkless legs of stone stand in the desert. Near them on the sand, a half-sunk and shattered visage lies. And then at the end of the poem, it says, and on the pedestal were the words, my name is Ozymandias, king of kings, look at my works, ye mighty, and despair. What's funny about that, he was like, man, I saw what I guess used to be a huge imposing statue. All it was now is some legs and a little head. But then next to the legs, it's like, stand in terror before the king of kings. You're like, king of kings, you're a busted statue in the middle of the desert, bro. You thought you were building a kingdom for your power for glory, but you're a vapor. None of us even know who you are. And so for us, there's a fragility to us. We don't last long. And that fragility should shape our priorities. It should change the way we think. Jesus spoke about this. This is James again, just ripping off his brother. Jesus was telling a story in Luke chapter 12 about a guy who was very successful in business. He said the guy was like, man, I crushed it. I'm going to cash out, invest all this money, and retire and have a blast. Eat, drink, and be merry. I won. And then Jesus ends the story by saying, you fool, tonight you die. which you could say, how am I a fool? I didn't know I was going to die tonight. And Jesus' answer would be no, but you knew you were going to die. And the fact of your fragility should have impacted your priorities. The fact that you know death is coming, and all of us do, the death rate is what it's always been, one per person. And that fact is true of all of us. And at different times in history, it was more obvious. Different times in history, even early in America, they'd put the graveyard in the center of town. So you'd always walk by and be like, that's where we're headed, kids. You know, I remember learning about the Puritans when they were teaching the alphabet to their kids. One of the rhymes was the letter A. A, as Adam did die, so will you and I. And you're like, wow, that's real upbeat. Technically accurate. But they wanted to let their kids know that because early in America, death was always at their door. Now we hide it. We keep the cemeteries far away. And so we get surprised by what will be inevitable for all of us. And yet Jonathan Edwards wrote it in his Resolutions, resolved to think often of my death and the common circumstances that attend death. I remember the first time I read that, I was like, dude, that guy sounds depressed. Why would you do that? Just, what, are we going to sit around and think about how you're going to die? Like 12 people a year apparently die from falling coconuts. You're just going to pray like, Lord, let that not be me? Like, what's the point of this? And then I realized he's just ripping off Moses from Psalm 91, where Moses says, you are like grass. You sprout up in the morning, and by the evening it's withered away. But then Moses says, so Lord, teach us to number our days aright that we may present to you a heart of wisdom. You're supposed to think about the fact that you'll end so that it will impact the way you live. That my fragility should shape my priorities. It should. So let me ask you a question. I should have done this earlier, but as you're walking in here, what are the top three things you're thinking about? What are the top three things you're trying to solve in life? What's the problem you're trying to tackle? What's the thing you're trying to get done? What's the mission you're trying to accomplish? What are the top three? What are the top five main things you're thinking about right now? How can I get this figured out? How can I get that? How can I get there? How can I move this? What are you thinking about? Now let me ask you this question. What if you found out tomorrow that you weren't going to live to see 2020, that you had something terminal? Would those be your same five priorities? I remember I talked to a friend once, and she said, you know what, man, I've attended a lot of funerals. And she said, when I was young, I would attend these funerals and think, what am I doing with my life? I was so concerned about, did this person like me, and did these people notice me, and did I get this position? And she said, every time I attended a funeral, I just realized so much of what I cared about was meaningless. But now, as she was in ministry, she said, you know what's changed about my life later? She said, now when I attend funerals, I look at my set of priorities and I say, nothing is more important than what I'm doing now. And I want to challenge you, in the face of death, are your priorities beautiful or are they broken? Are they never more important or are they something that you go, this won't matter a bit when I'm at death's door? What do you let shape you? We are going to die. Every single one of us, and we don't know when, and our fragility should shape our priorities. So I want to be about the main things before I go out. Do you see it? Now, here's the interesting thing. All of that's true, and all of that's helpful perspective. And I hope for some of us, this encourages you to make that phone call you've needed to make. Some of you need to ask for forgiveness, and you haven't, because you're a little insecure, a little embarrassed, a little proud, right? And you just thought, I'll do it later. Oh, at some point I'll tell them. Oh, maybe they'll just forget it. And you don't have someday, and you don't know that, and tomorrow's a gift. So maybe you just need to call someone and say, hey, I was a jerk earlier, I'm sorry. Or if you need to reach out to someone and say, I meant to encourage you and I never did it. I'm going to start now. Or some of you say, you know what? I've been meaning to join this church, get involved, start serving people. That's what I want to be true of me when I die. I just never got around to it. Well, you know what? I don't know when I'm going to die, so I better get about the things I want to be about now. Some of you, I hope this shapes the way you make decisions right now. I just did our first funeral of Passion City Church DC a few months ago. Buried him this week in Arlington National Cemetery. And let me tell you something. You stand there. That was somebody that was in our ranks. Somebody who set up those walls every single week is now no longer with us. And I don't know how long you will be. I don't know that all of us will be here within a year. But I want you to be able to say, man, I had good priorities with the fragility of my life. I did good with the few moments God gave me. And yet here's the reality. All of that's true, but none of this is distinctly Christian. Live every moment like it's your last. I mean, I could have just played you, what's the movie? The Bucket List, right? Or just played you that song, I Hope You Dance. You know what I mean? And just like, time's a wheel or something, so I hope you dance. I don't know. I could have done that, but James isn't done. That's only half the message, right? That there's a fragility to us, and that should shape our priorities. We have a limited visibility, so that should give us humility. Maybe I don't know everything that's going on, and so maybe I should evaluate what should I be about before I go out, right? But then James turns it and says, you've not just failed to see yourself rightly, you failed to see God rightly, because there's another player in this game. And what he says is, in verse 15, instead you ought to say, those of you who say, I'm going to do this, do that, I get this done, he's like, you don't know, that's presumption. You need to think less about presumption and more about providence. You don't run this place, but somebody else does. So instead, you ought to say, if the Lord wills, and then he gives you two things. We will live, and we will do this and that. Those are the other failures of perspective. If the Lord wills, I will live. What's fascinating about this, too, is so many people in history have come to faith when they contemplate this. Somebody else is driving. You see it in Louis Zamperini's story. You see it in Abraham Lincoln's story. You see it, for me, most recently in Andrew Jackson's story. I just read a biography of President Andrew Jackson. By mistake, I thought I was reading Thomas Jefferson. I bought the wrong biography. It was by the same author, all right? Don't judge me. I can hear y'all doing it. And I just decided, all right, I'll read about Andrew Jackson. Lived a pretty crazy life. I mean, he's, you know, gotten duels and it was weird. But, you know, was a real, like, self-made man, I'm doing it my own way kind of guy, and made it through his presidency, and towards the end of his life, showed up at a church gathering, and while he was there, the pastor saw him in the crowd and adapted his sermon for him. Should pastors do that? I don't know. Maybe. Maybe I'm doing it for you right now. But anyway, he sees Andrew Jackson, and he starts listing off parts of his life. How can somebody that was almost killed as a kid by a soldier that had to go through the wilderness, survived all these wars, he said, how can someone be through all this wilderness and all this war and see that their life's been preserved and be an intelligent person and not see the guiding hand of providence? And it bothered Andrew Jackson. I'm a self-made guy. But he's like, wait a minute. Yeah, how did I make it through all that? So he called the pastor and was like, I need you to come over to my house. And the pastor's like, I'm busy visiting other people, which really ticked off the president. Like, you put me on hold, bro? But he made him sit by himself for like a day. And as he sat there and contemplated his life, he realized, I'm not as in as much control as I thought I was. And somebody else is in control. And I need to make peace with that man because I don't have many years left. And Andrew Jackson came to faith in Jesus at the very end of his life. And it changed his heart, repented of a lot of things. Because he started to realize somebody else is driving. So James letting us know, you're not in as much control as you think you are, but somebody else is. Your will doesn't determine what happens tomorrow. You don't know. But if the Lord wills, we will live. If he wills, we will live. And here's the good news. He wills it because you live. And that's an encouraging thought. Your life is a gift. And that grace should produce gratitude. And I've noticed it usually takes a life-threatening situation for people to get that, you know? It's fascinating. Kevin Hart's probably the most recent one. You know, Kevin Hart, enormously successful. I love watching his career. Kevin Hart just began to get in shape. I don't know if you're talking, like, just began to get all yacked, and so you follow him on Instagram, more and more shots of him with no shirt on. You're like, getting a little proud, Kevin. You know, just some marbling of arrogance. And yet maybe, I don't know, I'm not judging you, just making some observations. It just seemed a little bit like that. And then what happened? He got in a huge car wreck, flipped a car, went dark, social media. We know he's hurt. We know it almost cost him his life. I don't know how bad. And then just a few weeks ago, he came back out. And you see him going through rehab, back braces, all this stuff. But the voiceover is so different. He's calm. He's saying, you know, it's funny how you think you got your life all figured out, and then all of a sudden, in a moment, everything changes. And then the next thing he says was, I'm so grateful. I thank God that I'm alive. I thank God every day because my breath is a gift. My family's a gift. This life is a gift, and I want to treasure it. And it just dawned on him, I'm not in control of my life. One wrong turn could have ended me, but God preserved me. And that grace produces gratitude. I don't deserve to be here, but somebody has let me. That's a powerful thing. I watched that happen to my friend who's a pastor when it dawned on him. man, that sequence of events that kept me alive, I was going to die today, but I just happened to drive downtown, and that meeting happened to end early, and so I happened to visit a friend, and a doctor happened to see my symptoms. That doctor happened to decide to help me, and that doctor happened to realize it and was able to get me to a surgery where I could immediately have my heart fixed so I could see my kids tonight. And he said, somebody was willing to keep me alive, and it was not me. Because the normal course of my life, I would have been dead by the evening. God preserved my life. If he wills, we will live. And he willed it, and I live. And I say, thank you. Because I didn't have to be here, and I'm here. I felt that when I hurt my back. I remember when I injured it, and I remembered being there with that doctor where he told me, hey, I don't know if you'll be able to walk again. And then he pointed at my pregnant wife, and he says, but I know you won't be able to hold that baby. And I remember when he said that, it was like my face got hot, the room started to spin. I'm like, this can't be real. Like, this is a nightmare. And he said, I can't fix you. You got to go home and hope your back fixes itself. It was terrifying to see my vulnerability to that. I can't stand up by my own volition. And that happened in a moment. And yet God, by his grace, started to heal my back. I was able to get up. I was able to walk with a cane. I remember when I finally got back to preaching, while the band was playing, they would have me on a table back behind the curtain, working on my back. During the last song, I'd slowly slide off. And I would do like one of those FDR deals where I'd walk with the cane. And then right before I got on stage, I'm like, go ahead and take this. And just sort of walk out very dramatically, gingerly. Give some sermons while flying on drugs. They weren't my best. We took them all offline. But I tell you, every time I pick up my kids, I feel grateful. Because I didn't earn that. I don't deserve that. But he willed that I live, and he willed that I can do this for that. And I'm happy about that. It's the same with you. And that humility should permeate our perspective. It should shape our priorities. I mean, I had a pastor friend who used to do this. He used to tell everybody, can we do this class? He said, hold up these two fingers right here. He said, put them right here. Go ahead and participate. Like four of y'all are doing it. Come on, everybody. What is that? It's your pulse, right? You feel a beat? If you don't, you got a problem. Raise your other hand. I'll come find you. But yeah, that's your heart pumping blood through your body. Question, what do you have to do with that? You didn't make that happen. But if it wasn't happening, you wouldn't be here. You're not making it happen now. You're not sitting here going beat, 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 beat. But someone has decided to let that continue. And that's all of grace. And when you realize it's the grace of another that keeps me alive, that gives you gratitude. If the Lord wills, I will live. And he wills that. That should shoot our day through with gratitude. God, you're directing my story. And when you realize that, then that gives you the humility to go, then what do you want me to do with this day? Because if the Lord wills, we will live. And if he wills, we will do this or that. And what I love about that is what that's saying here is that everything that exists, exists because God wills it to. What does that mean? It means God has a will. God has a desire. God has a journey. God has a purpose. And so we're not just accidentally here. There is a God who has made all this and continues to let this exist and continues to let you exist because he has a purpose he's accomplishing and we can get alongside of that. And when you understand that, that rescues you from a mundane life. Because so many people think the world's a closed system. Well, the sun rises and sets because the sun always rises and sets. And we go to work to earn money, to buy food, to get a job, to raise kids so those kids can get a job, to buy food, and then die, and then we all die. And we just kind of in this little closed system that has no purpose or meaning. And meaninglessness is the plague of our generation. But when you realize this, no, all this exists because someone wills it to be so. And he has a will. He has a purpose. And I can align my will with his. That shoots every day through with straight up magic. That makes every day amazing. I don't have to be here and I won't always be here. And yet there's a God who's chosen that I'm here and all this is here and we get to move. So don't buy the lie. We're just in some closed system that has no purpose or meaning. You hear that sometimes in scientific circles. Stephen Hawking said that. We know there's a law of gravity. Therefore, the universe created itself. That we don't need to posit a deity because we understand the scientific processes. John Lennox challenged him on that. In a number of ways, but the mathematician from Oxford, John Lennox, said this. He asked the question, I love the way it came out. He said, why does water boil? So why does water boil? He said, well, you could say water boils because the heating coil in my kettle causes the molecules in the water to vibrate. And as they vibrate, they pick up heat. And as it heats up, it gets to 100 degrees Celsius, and then it begins to boil. That's one way you could answer why water boils. Or you could say, because I want some tea. And both are true. And just because you understand the scientific process does not remove the need for agency. So don't go, oh, well, the life just kind of spins on because this is the world and it just keeps going. No, it keeps going because someone willed it to be so. And so don't lose the wonder that there's a will behind all of this. I love the way G.K. Chesterton talks about an orthodoxy. He called it the ethics of Elfland. He said, I'm tired of this mentality that says there's nothing magic about the universe. It can all be explained away. He says, yes, you can explain the process of how things work, but you can't explain the why it works that way. The why sounds just like fairy tales. He said, in fairy tales, they say princes become bears. And you go, okay. And some of you go, oh, that's so fake. And he's like, but look at your world. Eggs become chickens. He says, that's weirder. He said, I know princes that look more like bears than chickens that look more like eggs. You just accept that. Well, eggs become chickens. Why? Oh, because we understand it becomes an embryo. Yeah, but back it up. That's weird. It's a weird process. And this whole place, we can understand the process of how it works, but the why is just straight magic because God chose it to be that way. And the fact that it keeps rolling on like this is completely a gift of his. We are not in a dead universe that just got wound up and left behind. And I love it. He likens it to a child. He said, a child likes to kick in rhythm. And he said, that's not because of an absence of life, but an excess of it. He said, same with you. The sun goes rises and sets, not because it's an absence of life, some machine, but because it's an overabundance of life, because God has not lost his youthful vigor, that when he sees the sun rise and puts it down, he's just like a cute little kid. Do it again. Do it again. Do it again. And the reason the sun keeps coming up is because God loves to see it that way. The reason why all daisies look alike, because God's not tired of making daisies. That this world rolls on because there's a will behind it, because God wants it to be that way. He wants this world to work, and he wants you to work within it. And so you can look at that and say, you know what? I don't know what's going on. I'm limited, but you know. I'm fragile, and that fragility should shape my priorities. I'm not here very long, but you made this place. You made me. You have a will, and I want to align my will with yours. If the Lord wills, I will live, and I live. So if the Lord wills, I will do this or that. Well, I want to do this or that. Now, here's the thing. I know I've said all this, and for some of you, none of this sounds like good news. You go, okay, Ben, so basically the point is, I'm not in control of my life. Someone else is in control of my life. Hate this message, because some of you like control, and you hate being told what to do. And for some of you, someone had power over your life, and they abused it, and they abused you. And so talking about the sovereignty of God and your fragility bothers you. I don't like this. I don't want providence. I want my plan. And here's the reality of that. James has grabbed a sentence that was actually kind of common in the time for ancient Greeks. They would say, if the gods will. If the gods will, this craft will make it to Thessalonica and I'll see you. If the gods will, I'll make it home alive to see my family. And they said it that way because they were just very close to death. It was always kind of up in the air. Like, hey, about half these boats crash. So if the gods will, I'll make it. If not, I'll never see you again. Like, they just didn't know. But as they said that, there was a resignation to it because the gods were capricious and mean. And they were like, the gods may let me live, they may kill me. And I don't know, man. It was just an admonition of just their vulnerability to forces outside their control. It's not a fun way to live. James doesn't say that. James says, if the Lord wills, we will do this or that. And he takes the personal name Lord. In Hebrew, it's the name Yahweh. We translate Lord. It's the personal name for God, the covenantal name for God. The name God said, I'm giving you this name as a covenant. Like, I promise to love you. I promise to be here with you like a husband and a wife. And it's the name given to Jesus. He is the Lord. It was the first creed of the early Christians. Kuria Jesu, Jesus is Lord. The one who leads me is the Lord. And I can know him. And I can trust him. And the more I trust him, the easier it is to submit to him. It's not some random capricious deities controlling my life. It is the Lord who loves me. How do you know he loves you? Because he's not asking you to do something he wasn't willing to do himself. That Jesus, when he saw the wreckage of humanity, God did not stand far off, but God willed that his son would enter the story. And Jesus Christ took that infinite condescension to become a human being with you and me. And he stepped into this world. He took on humility. He didn't come to accolades. He walked around as a homeless man. And yet he was gracious to those who were hurting. He was tender to those in pain. He was forgiving of those who were in shame. He was beautiful. And yet what happened when he walked this earth? He said, I say what the Lord wills for me to say. I do what the Lord wills for me to do. I will submit myself to the will of God. And when he finally got to the end of his life, knowing that cross was coming, he said, Lord, if there's any way to let this cup pass from me, let it, but not my will, but yours. And he kept submitting his will to the will of God. And he died on that cross, taking the sins of the world on himself, and they buried him. But then he didn't stay dead. And he made death not a cave we enter into for eternal sleep, but he blew out the back and made it a valley. That we walk through the valley in the shadow of death, but we come out the other side. And his most tragic day became our most victorious. That his death became our pathway to life. That cross is not a dark thing, but an illuminated thing, because it brings life. And his submission to the will of the Father, though painful for a season, exploded into life, like a seed in the dirt exploding with much fruit. And the same will be true of you. The same Jesus that submitted to the will of his Father, who is good and whose purposes are redemptive, tells you, submit to the will of your Father, walk with him, and I promise you, he will not waste your life. And so this can be a good thing. God's purposes are better than mine. I don't want to build my little sandcastles that fade in time. I want to build his kingdom that races on into forever. I don't want to raise up my little banner that will be blown away by the slightest wind. I want to raise up the banner of the name Jesus, because it will echo through eternity, because he's the true King of Kings and Lord of Lords. And I'm going with him. And so that's what we're called to today. I want to align my will with his. And when I understand that, that produces wonder. Every day's an adventure. I don't know what's coming, but I know the one driving. And he's not going to give you all the information. So I just align my will to his. I will keep in step with you. And for some of you, that means getting involved in church. And you may go, well, man, I don't even know if I want to get involved in church. What I really do is I want purpose and meaning in my life. I'm lost. Well, hey, guess what? You may arrive in a place in 6 months where you get that diagnosis and you're laying in a hospital bed, but there's six of us around you, holding hands with you, praying over you, because you took the step next week to go to Friendsgiving and not be so lonely, but put yourself out there. And you got into a community group, and you got into a fight club, and you got to know some people, so that 6 months down the road, when that diagnosis did come, you have some people around you that love you, and you get to know the extreme warmth of having a community that cares. But you don't know if that diagnosis is coming. You don't know what's going on. All you know is he put in front of you, you should go to church. And you did it today, and that's good. Now what's next? Or others of you, you won't be the one who gets a diagnosis. Somebody else in your community group will. And you'll be the person holding their hand, praying over this person that right now is a stranger to you, but in 6 months from now, you can't imagine doing life without. But here's the deal. You're wrestling with a deep insecurity because you weren't sure if you were loved the right way as a kid, and you don't know if you have any friends in the city, and you kind of look at social media, and it kind of pings your insecurity, and you're going, how do I get out of this web? And what's going to happen is 6 months from now, you're going to be holding someone's hand, praying over them as they march into the face of Jesus. And as you're holding their hand, you go, this is so worthwhile. This is exactly who I want to be. This is the kind of life I want to live as I die. Now suddenly I am liberated from the tyranny of self-absorption that was coming from my social media, but not because I tried to, just because I took this little step of getting into a community group and I knew these people, and suddenly my life is shot through with purpose. You can't see all that. Your vision's limited. All you can see now, as he said, don't neglect the gathering together. Let's encourage one another as long as it's called today. That's all he's going to give you. He's not going to tell you the rest, but you can know he's guiding things, and that's not oppressive, it's liberating. It's not liberating to have no idea where the story's going. If Harry Potter was born, and he said, what's this life about? I don't know. What's it about to you? Is there real evil in the world? Is Voldemort evil? I don't know. Is he evil to you? Do I have a purpose in my life? I don't know. Do you have a purpose? Someone tell me what's going on! It's not oppressive to tell him, yeah, man, there's real evil in the world. But you've been born for a purpose, and you can fulfill that purpose. How are the mechanics going to work out? I don't know, man. But I know you should probably figure out how to use this wand. I think it's going to have something to do with this. And same with you. There's real evil in the world, but Jesus has done something decisive about it. And he wants to use your life to make a difference. He doesn't waste the lives of his people. He says, precious to me are the blood of my saints. Precious are their tears. I keep them in my bottle. He knows your pain and he knows you. And he's positioned you for a purpose. You can say, well, what am I going to do in 5 years? I'm not going to tell you that. That's behind the curtain of mystery. But I'm going to tell you today that you were made to know me. So why don't we crack open my word and listen to what I have to say to you? I know you are made for community, that we are members of one another. So why don't you go ahead and prioritize getting to know some people here? I know that the forgiven people forgive people. So why don't you make that phone call you've been scared to make? And I know when I take steps with him, I look up and sometimes he just lets the path unfold. But at the end of these days, let me tell you, you're going to want to live that life. When I did that burial this week at Arlington National Cemetery, the man's a hero by every measure of the word. For his service to our country, absolute hero. But I was sent all this stuff about the kind of life he lived that wasn't maybe necessarily printed on the medals he won, as many of them as there were. But I look at his life, and God calls husbands to sacrifice to love their wives. And he asked his wife, "How can I serve you?" And she never cleaned the house the day he was alive. He knew she hated cleaning the house, so he just did it. He rode a bike to work for 10 years so he could save money to adopt some kids from overseas. Every time he switched deployments, gave away his car to somebody who needed it. Just live the kind of life you will have wanted to have lived when you die. I had a mentor tell me that. We're all going to preach our own funerals. Someone will get up and say something, but everybody knows what kind of person you were. So what kind of person do you want to be? He didn't know that 2019 was going to be the end of his time here. But man, he lived the way you would have wanted to live if you knew it was your time. And I want that for you. I want you to look at my life and say, I know I'm transient, so I'm going to get around God's purposes. I know the Lord wills that I live, and I don't want to take a day for granted. I know Jesus marched through this life in obedience to his Father, and I want to march in rhythm with him. And I know he led through a valley of the shadow of death, and I may go through it too now, but he came out the other side, and I'm rolling with him. So if you know what to do and don't do it, that's sin. He said, God's not going to tell you everything, but he's going to tell you some things you need to do, and let's get about doing it and trust him to do his part. We don't get to know everything, but we get to know him, and that's enough. That's enough to live a beautiful life. So at the end of it, we could say, you know what? I did something. With the few years he gave me, I took my little flicker of a flame and I put it in that eternal flame of Jesus. I took the little brick of my life and I stacked it on the cornerstone of Jesus to build his kingdom. I took my mouth and I used it to sing an eternal song that'll echo into eternity. I took my life and I aligned it with the purposes that matter most. That's my prayer for you and for me.
If you were encouraged by today's talk, be sure to rate us and hit subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you stream your podcasts. To experience other talks, videos, and live gatherings, visit us online at PassionCityChurch.com or download the Passion Movement app. And again, thank you for listening to the Passion City Church DC podcast.